This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
Lindsay Clancy's murder trial is getting underway in Plymouth. Both sides agree that she took the lives of her three children. The only question is whether postpartum psychosis made her criminally responsible. That is the big question. And today we're going to do a big psychological breakdown of this case. Been very much looking forward to this. We're going to tackle it in three different lanes. We're going to talk first about what is postpartum psychosis, because it is different than postpartum depression. It's different than the baby blues. It's different than just turning a frown upside down. We're going to dive into that because that's the core of this case, and understanding the main core elements is rather important to decipher a case and work through it. Then we're going to talk about Lindsay Clancy herself, the clinical picture. What was going on with her specifically? We're going to dive into all that. And then also, why is it so hard, it seems, for the court system to understand mental health and the community as a whole to fully grasp this? And will a jury of 18 of her peers be able to come to a conclusion at the end of the day and a verdict? That is all in store for you today. We welcome your questions, your comments, all that in the comment section on Substack, YouTube, Facebook, X, wherever you're watching us. Please weigh in. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, is who is with us to help us break this whole thing down, along with Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Let's start here. 80% of new mothers get some version of baby blues, if you will. That is, I'm going to say broadly, some version of it. One in seven gets categorized into postpartum depression. One in 2 per 1,000 get psychosis. People treat those like the same condition if they don't quite understand it, like it's one with a different volume. In our interest of understanding psychosis, postpartum psychosis specifically, is psychosis even part of the spectrum of postpartum depression, or is it a completely different animal, Siobhan?
Absolutely different animal. Absolutely different. And this is one of the things I'm most passionate about, because psychosis runs in my family. Mm-hmm. And I have a very deep awareness and understanding of it, because it's something I've really focused on and studied for my entire career. And even years before I was a therapist as a kid, I was always trying to figure out, why is my aunt so weird, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a completely different animal. Baby blues is mainly caused by fatigue. You know how, if you've had a kid, you know how exhausted you are. You're not sleeping. You may be up most of the night. Breastfeeding takes a toll. The hormones are going crazy. And baby blues is completely normal. Now, when you move into postpartum depression, that's a deepening of, you know, it's a different quality to it. And that's when, I mean, most people have had episodes of depression, but this can be a very deep depression. And you want people to get help and support with that, because that may go on for months. You know, that baby blues is a short-term thing when you start getting the kid regulated and you're sleeping and breastfeeding is, you know, kind of been resolved and things are fine. It will self-correct. Mm-hmm. Postpartum depression, maybe not. They may need some therapy. They may need, you know, temporary, some kind of medication to help regulate their nervous system. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely something that can improve. Postpartum psychosis is a broken brain. It's completely different. It's not depression, although you can get depression with it. But psychosis is someone that's had a complete and utter break with reality. They're having delusions, false thoughts that can't be true. They're often having hallucinations, usually auditory hallucinations. And this can be very extreme, although I can talk about it for an hour, but I'll sort of intersperse as we talk here so I don't just give a lecture. Yeah. But one of the key points I want to make, because even people involved in true crime and very educated people don't understand the difference between psychopath and psychotic. And it's so important to understand because we talk about these things. We throw these words out all the time. Psychopath is a personality type. It's a predator. It's someone with no conscience. And these are people that commit a lot of crimes. obviously, you know, a large percentage of the prison population is psychopathic. They're people we want to understand and watch out for. So we talk about those folks a lot in true crime. Psychotic can also be somebody that commits a crime, but the majority of people who are psychotic do not. But that's a brain disease. It's a symptom of something that's underlying, like schizophrenia, bipolar 1 disorder, and then there are a few other things that can cause it, but it's usually one or the other of those. And when you get psychosis postpartum, this is a Category 5 hurricane. This is an emergency because this person is no longer thinking in a rational, cogent way. They're not like the rest of us. And, you know, when you have that person taking care of a newborn and other young children, terrible things can happen. And that's what we're seeing here with this case.
Siobhan, I was looking this up when you said I didn't really realize that because, yeah, there's a huge difference between psychosis and psychopaths, huge difference. And I didn't really realize that it's actually genetic. It can be genetic to run in families. And actually, I just looked it up if it does run in her family, and there's no record of that yet. Do you think that's something that they would actually maybe try to look up and try to research to put into account when doing a defense of her? Would it be, have you seen that before? Maybe not.
It sure should be. I don't know that it often is done because, you know, the court system doesn't always seem to be interested in in-depth explanations for psychological processes, unfortunately, but highly heritable, highly genetic. And that's why on my mother's side of the family in particular, if you look, you can trace it down generations from an aunt to my aunt's daughters. Mm-hmm. I've got cousins who have struggled with it. My aunt ended up in a mental institution for, you know, multiple years near the end of her life, but went undiagnosed for most of her life throughout my childhood. Nobody ever diagnosed her. We just said she was weird. Yeah.
Yeah, they're complete blips because everything else, you know, that I do and that we cover a lot of times are these arcs of behavior, and her arc of behavior is not this. And so those psychotic breaks really explain those away. Yes. You know, and we've said this before when dealing with psychopaths, no other species of any organism on this planet is sadistic or psychopathic. It's just us as humans. And this seems to be popping up that's very unique to us as a species on this planet as well. Genetically, I mean, I know it's a question that goes into genetics and our evolution and everything. Any idea why we actually have this trait that actually can pop up genetically for us? I mean, it just makes no sense in a way of survival or in procreation or anything why we'd have this trait that popped up.
Yeah, it really seems to be a flaw in humanity. And it's you know, people may speculate when it comes to psychopaths, some people say, well, they're useful, you know, because there are times you need in war, you need somebody who's brutal, who doesn't have a conscience. So evolution may favor psychopathy, you know, in some way. This is still being speculated about that they have a use. But when it comes to psychosis, that kind of broken brain, I mean, it's sort of like a terrible disease like cancer, you know? It's like diabetes. It's like this flaw in the body, in this case, in the brain and the neurological system that absolutely ruins people's lives. It's just an insidious, insidious condition.
To help people understand, a psychopath, basically, personality type, you're born with it. That's who you are. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Psychotic brain disease, it can come on. It can be triggered by something and then and then come on. Can it also, I mean, if you get into that state, I think I know the answer to this, but I want your answer to it. You know, you can come out of it as well, correct? Mm-hmm. And when you come out of it, in obviously this will be conjecture, but when we're looking at Lindsay Clancy here, when she was able to come out of that state, is the person aware of what they did? Are they like, is there memories of those moments? But you know, memory of these thoughts that at that moment in time made sense to her. But when you're out of the psychotic state, clearly you can see the error in your ways, to put it lightly.
Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful question because you see a lot of different patterns with it. And some people, when severely psychotic, don't remember what they did. Mm-hmm. most people do. They do are able, you're able to sit and talk with them. And sometimes it does sort of abate naturally. It seems like it was an episode, particularly bipolar 1 disorder, which is the type of bipolar where people do get very psychotic. That can come and go. It can ebb and flow. But most of the time with schizophrenia, the other one, they don't remit without treatment. You know, they really need psychiatric medication that can stop the hallucinations, stop the delusions, and bring them back to their baseline. Because most people, before they have a psychotic break, which can come on suddenly, they're perfectly normal. You would never look at them and think, this person is ultimately going to have a psychotic episode. There's not the warning signs that you see with many of the criminals we talk with, where you look at the behavior patterns over the lifespan and you can go back to, well, they were doing things as kids that were cruel and hurting animals and all that. With psychosis, it can come on most often in early adulthood, sometimes late teens, you start seeing some of the delusional things start, or the hallucinations. But it can come on at any time. It can come on in middle life, even in elderly folks. In elderly folks, another interesting bit is sometimes dementia can come along with psychosis, which is really a nightmare to manage.
What is it that brings it on in, what is it, 2 out of every 1,000, 1 or 2 out of every 1,000 women who go through a pregnancy, it's rare, much more rare than postpartum depression. But what is it that brings it on through that modality of being pregnant? Is it the hormone changes, the ups and the downs and all that, and then that already stimulate something that the brain already has, just kind of needed the key to be unlocked?
Yeah, a neuroscientist could probably give a more in-depth explanation of what I can. But as I understand it, the tremendous hormonal shifts that happen in pregnancy, if you have a brain that's already sensitive to this kind of change, that the hormonal changes along with the stress of having another child, particularly if you've got several other kids, this can cause this break to happen. So it's something we'll be studying for a long time and hopefully getting better at spotting it and monitoring what could be going on.
Yeah, and that's my question, Siobhan. So I was looking up, postpartum psychosis has been recognized for over 2,000 years. I mean, the Greeks had it recognized. I mean, this has been around for a long time. It was included in DSM a number of years ago, obviously. Are we getting better at recognizing this, or are we ignoring it? I mean, it's kind of shocking that, because I was expecting this to actually just be a recent thing that we started recognizing as we've gotten more advanced, as we've, you know, not stigmatized mental health. Maybe this is kind of a new thing, but it's not a new thing. Just look, Google it and you'll see, oh my God, how come we're not doing better at this right now?
We're doing, as an entire society, we are doing a shit poor job of understanding mental health and understanding mental illness in every type of mental illness. I'm online a lot and I'm monitoring the chatter and people are still saying demon possession. A lot of people are saying they're hearing the voices of demons. And it just makes me absolutely crazy because I did hear that in my religious childhood upbringing. Yep. These people are all demon possessed. We've got to pray it away. Guess what? Doesn't work. That's how people get killed. Yeah. So we've got to keep educating, which is why I appreciate you guys and what we try to do on this show so much, because that's what it's about. We can't solve problems when we're ignorant about what causes it and what it looks like. And we've got to try to educate people. But Amen. Families also, you know, I have had in my 30 plus year, I hate to say how many years because it really dates me, but my 30 plus years of practice, I have had one case of postpartum psychosis and it terrified me because of the woman being home alone with the baby. The family was blowing it off. They were saying she's just stressed. She's always been a little anxious. She's having some anxiety. It was psychosis. And I could see it very clearly. Her OB didn't see it. And the family was leaving her home alone with the baby all day. So
what what allowed you to see it and other people were going along the life arc that she gave, you know, because, you know, Lindsay's a great example of this. When you first do that deep dive, her background, who she was, the type of wife, the type of mother, the mm-hmm. type of daughter, the type of nurse, it gives that arc of nothing to worry about here. But what allowed you to see it in that other case that the others weren't? Because I'm guessing it's probably very similar in a lot of that respect.
She came in crisis, and she was a former client that I hadn't seen since her pregnancy. And I got a crisis call from her, and I was able
to... And I'm sorry, Siobhan, let me interrupt. What's a crisis call to you?
When somebody calls really agitated, and okay. I hear in their voice, we've got to change here. You know, we've got something different. And she was very upset. She wanted to come in and talk to me. And... as they say, I'm really tuned into psychosis, and not all therapists are. So I think even, you know, people who are fairly good therapists, it's just not their area of interest, so they don't study it. I think therapists miss it a lot of the time, which is a tragedy. They've got to do better. You know, we've got to hold them accountable for paying more attention. But in talking with her for an hour, I knew what questions to ask mm-hmm. and how to really get into, okay, what's the thinking processing going on here, which the family wasn't really doing that. And they were just saying, oh, she's always been anxious, you know, so she's just having anxiety. And then going on with their day, because they also had an investment in not wanting her to be their term crazy. They right. didn't want her to be crazy. Very proud family, very educated people. And they were above that sort of thing. So I ended up, I was so alarmed. She was at home alone with the baby. She didn't feel safe at home alone with the baby. She was telling people that. They weren't listening to her. So I called her husband, got her consent, and she agreed. Called her husband from work and said, you need to come into my office. I canceled the following person because, you know, sometimes you have to do that and say, I have to reschedule you because there's a crisis. I called both her parents to come in and her sister to come in. And I tried to get through to them, this is not okay. She needs to be in a hospital. And then it was quite an ordeal because we lived in a community in California that did not have a private psychiatric hospital. And even though she was well insured, you call around to try to find a psychiatrist to see somebody in case of emergency. New clients, a wait of 6 months.
Ha!
Right? Or, and this is the norm in the country. This is a standard throughout America. You know, I wrote a number down, 40% of people in the U.S. live in a federally designated mental health shortage area where there just aren't people. We have a terrible shortage of psychiatrists. And this is the kind of thing, we shouldn't put this on the obstetrician to manage, you know, or the...
And one of the things in this case, I mean, the mental health desert, what, you know, and I will say this, thank God this exists. I mean, the fact that we now have online therapy, that does certainly help some of the mental health deserts that used to exist. But still physically, they do exist, but I guess it's better than nothing. And we've had, you know, those supporters over the years. Lindsay's providers allegedly charted intrusive thoughts when she described a male voice commanding her to hurt her children. Is that an intrusive thought or something else completely different that should have been handled and looked at for the weight that it was?
Completely different. And that's a clinical failure. Were they not listening well enough? Were they not asking the right questions? Was it a 15-minute check-in visit, you know, what was going on? Because intrusive thoughts, a lot of us have had some intrusive thoughts. It can go with major depression, you know, and that's along the lines of, I just screw everything up all the time. I'm a loser. I can't get a good job. You know, they're unpleasant. You recognize them as, this is a thought I'd rather not be having. But it can also go along. So major depression can cause it. OCD can cause it. I'm really worried about insects in my food. Oh, no, I have to look carefully. Well, right now I have to wash my lettuce really carefully because there could be something in my lettuce. And so they think about it too much.
Yeah.
But it's not severe in the same sense of I am literally hearing voices in my head that are telling me things that are completely bizarre and can't be true. And the thing with the psychotic symptoms, the delusional thinking, the person doesn't realize that this is unreasonable. You know, yeah, it's right. They fully, completely believe it.
Siobhan, the other thing that you keep referring to, asking the right questions, you ask the right questions, you think, I don't want to throw conjecture on it, but you're wondering what questions her therapist asked. Are there specific questions for people that are going through this now or fearful of this now? Is there anything that the type of question you can ask that might be a bit of a wobble that might say, all right, we need to pay closer attention to this, or is it really situational?
It is situational, but I think the key thing is you have to spend enough time with the person to get their internal experience. And, they may not be disclosing of it. So they have to trust you enough to disclose it. So it's really spending that quality time, gaining their trust, and then really asking the things. If they say, well, I'm just feeling upset, I'm not sleeping. Okay, you have to go beyond that. Tell me what goes on in your head when mm-hmm. you're not able to sleep. Or they may say, I'm having anxiety. Tell me the thoughts mm-hmm. that are behind the anxiety. And so it really takes, let's just go deeper. Let's go deeper. Yeah. Let's go deeper. Right. And sometimes family members, they don't know how to do that. So it takes some presence and skill to be able to go deeper.
Well, and it seems sometimes clinicians don't either. And we're going to get into that here in just a second. Yeah. That's what postpartum psychosis is as a condition. Now, let's talk about what actually was happening to Lindsay Clancy. And as we do, put your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to continue to weigh in.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.